Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We booty, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
The College Ball Show is back, and we're here to discuss everything surrounding the sport of college basketball and just basketball in general. As you know, if you've listened to the show the last couple weeks, we have added a NBA segment at the end of the show, so take note of that. We had a big weekend in the sport of college basketball, some interesting matchups that we will break down. We also had a pretty solid game tonight with Texas Tech in Oklahoma. We'll break that down. So we're going to break down some of the action. That Purdue and Michigan State game was very tight. I did call Virginia, as far as losing, I just called them a game ahead. they could go back-to-back losses like Purdue. They're up on the road at Miami. And I was talking about Miami being the upset not a Saturday ago, but they stumbled and they stubbed their toe as well. But yeah, Virginia goes down. So we'll talk about the weekend. We'll talk about this early week, like I mentioned tonight. But we've talked about this Big 12. Will somebody dethrone the conference champs? They hold the crown 13 years in a row. Of course, I'm talking about the Kansas Jayhawks. Texas Tech took a nice step forward tonight, got a nice W. So we'll kind of wrap up the last couple of days, and then we'll look forward. There are some very interesting matchups. We're like a month away. And if you're in the Big Ten, it's going to sneak up on some people, but it's actually a shorter Big Ten season, not shorter as far as the number of games, but shorter in March because they play two conference games in December, early December, because they're going to do the Big Ten title game in New York City. So it's more of a money, pub advertising type thing. So that's going to kind of sneak up. But we will look forward to some of these big games coming up on the weekend. Xavier, Nova, big game in the Big East, no doubt about that. That's got plenty of importance, whether it's in the league or a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. West Virginia and Kansas, neck and neck at 2-3 behind Texas Tech. Obviously, that makes it a big game. And Duke and Clemson. Clemson has just kind of quietly stayed in contention, especially if Virginia were to go down here, maybe a week ago, 10 days ago, kind of looked like, so who's going to get second and third place? Maybe Virginia will come back to the pack. There are some interesting games, Ohio State, Michigan as well. So we'll kind of look at that. And of course, like I said, the NBA as well. I'm going to talk about my T-Wolves, talk about Cleveland's first game. They're actually playing right now. We'll catch you up to date with that as well. But if this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, you can check it out right here live. It's actually under the umbrella of the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. So under this, we talk boxing, football, and basketball. Obviously, on this show, once a week, just like the boxing show, it's just basketball right now. But we do college football as well. And the show itself starts in late August, college football all the way to the national title game. then we switch our focus, what we're focused on right now, and that is basketball, especially college basketball. Take that way all the way to the national title game. Then it's the NBA playoffs, the finals, the draft, and one of our favorite shows of the year, NBA Free Agent Show. That'll be the last one in early July, so stay with us on a weekly basis all the way through. Like I mentioned, you can check it out right here at where it streams live in archives, the headquarters, basically, blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. Can also check it out on iTunes, a.k.a. Apple Podcasts. Player FM is another great outlet. Spreaker, Stitcher, really anywhere you listen to your podcast. Also, the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. It's available at all those places. They got a great app there at Spreaker as well. They're also available. It's also available, the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, on iHeartRadio. So go ahead and check out the website either way, thegruelingtruth.net. You can check out the show there as well, obviously, thegruelingtruth.net. They got a great sponsor over there, mybookie.ag. That's mybookie.ag. Now that we got that stuff out of the way, why don't we break into some of this recap, shall we? Two of the biggest stories was Virginia going down to in-state rival. Biggest stories from the weekend, Saturday in particular. Virginia going down to Virginia Tech. It's kind of a scrappy club, but still shouldn't, you know, shouldn't beat them. But, you know, you just felt like, all right, at some point they're going to lose here. Now, it'll be interesting to see if they can, you know, not go back-to-back here tonight, like I said, and we'll kind of keep you posted as we're talking about this. But Virginia managed, and it kind of makes sense, they managed to actually hold the number one spot, which is, you know, kind of surprising a little bit. Some people thought, well, in another game we'll talk about, we'll probably lead with this game, Michigan State and Purdue. A lot of people thought, well, Michigan State's won like, what is it, 9 in a row now? They just beat the number 3 team. Why aren't they number 1? And it's kind of an interesting point. Obviously, Nova going down. Someone had to move up. And I kind of agree with it because if you look at those 8 wins in a row, they really hadn't beat anyone, the Spartans. So I think that it's kind of a strange way to stumble into it, no doubt about it. But it is Virginia. It's their first time being number one since 1982. And a certain Cavalier legend called Ralph Sampson, I believe you heard of it. I think he was a senior at the time. And that's the key word there, Marshall. A senior. 1982. So that was the last time. But anyway, let's get into this Michigan State game. Michigan State, Purdue. And a couple of things stood out to me. It was a tight game, no doubt about it. A couple of things stood out. The big man. And we've been talking about Haas, and Purdue needs Haas to develop. And it's funny because shot blocking and rebound, he usually would be good at, right? No doubt about it. But he's actually put up some points here back-to-back. I think he had 18 in a loss against Ohio State. And then he had like 20, I don't know if it was 26, or he had a big game. Only 5 rebounds in both games, though. And like you pointed out, not many rebounds between the two big, you know, 7-footers, the mini Twin Towers, I guess you could say, if you call them mini. One's a freshman. I think Haas is a senior by now, right? It seems like he's been there for 7 years. But on that big guy theme, Marshall, and I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host right about now, the theme is feed the big man. Feed the big man. Bridges got 20 points in the ball game. Obviously, the last 3 were pretty big with 2.2 seconds left coming through in the clutch to get the job done. But Michigan State is 10-0 when he scores more than 20 points or 20 points plus. And that has been kind of, you know, they're very deep as the Spartans. They are, but sometimes you can be a little too spread it out, You know what I mean? And maybe they need to go back to him who he's had a good sophomore season. Definitely not a huge disappointment, but you'd think that he would have, you know, he lost all that weight. You'd think he would have built off of that, but it could be just the team thing. I mean, it hasn't been that bad. They're 9 in a row now or 8 in a row, something like that. But let's talk a little bit about that game. And what we saw in that Michigan and Purdue game, man.
Yeah, you know, I think Purdue's kind of flipped the script a little bit. I think if they could have combined this team they have this year with last year, they'd be really special, Chris. Last year I kind of felt like their guard play wasn't good enough to go along with Swanigan and Haas, and that's what kind of kept them from being a great team. And this year, obviously losing Swanigan hurt, and it hurt really bad because he could have stayed. He wasn't forced to go, and he's, I think, been riding the pine or in D-League. And you just kind of imagine how dangerous they would have been with Swanigan kind of helping Haas out, because last year, Haas was like a guy that's pretty good, but Swanigan had, like, more moves and was a better defender and just kind of a more complete player. So if he got in foul trouble, they could bring Haas in. Or if they wanted to go double big, they can play them both. This year, you do have guys who are bigs, but they're not exactly rugged and tough. But they've been playing better, but their guard play has been really good. I saw Purdue's got the fourth best three-point shooter in the Big Ten. Their guard play seems to be solid this year. It's definitely picked the level up, and that's progressed. So it seems like a lot of these teams, their DNA can change year to year, but they're always, like, missing something. So I think that if Purdue, as we've stated, can see progression from their big man, Chris, they're probably as complete of a team as you can ask for. You know, this year we haven't really seen a standout stud team. But Purdue's guards, their three-point shooting play, their kind of underdog, you know, incredible home court advantage, they have a lot of good stuff going for them. Coach has been there forever. You know, there's a lot for them to be happy about, and this is probably one of the best years they've had. And for as of right now, they're maybe up for a one seed. And Purdue's always kind of been that team that's been like a – between a 5 or an 8, it's like, oh, Purdue's scrappy, but are they really going to make it a Sweet 16? I like how the guard play has improved, Chris. Their three-point shooting is pretty nasty. And the bigs, who are not tough, at least if you're not going to be tough, if you can get combined maybe 20-plus points on those guys a night, that's about all you can ask for, and that should be enough for you to win. Because maybe they don't get rebounds, but at least they do – affect shots in the lane, which sometimes is a big
right.
college. That's all you need to do. Put your hand straight up, don't foul, and make a dude hit a floater or a trickle shot over you. And most guys in college aren't that good enough, even NBA. So if you can't rebound, at least make it tough as heck for a dude to hit like a shot inside the lane. So lots of positives, I'd say, going on for Purdue. Obviously, they lost the game, which is tough, but that team's trending in the right direction for coming into the next month, I would say.
What'd you get out of Michigan State? I mean, since they won the game and all. You're right, it was the three-point shooting, although they're pretty damn good at it. They definitely struggled and had a couple of times Purdue did to I'm not going to say put the dagger down, but to kind of grab that thing, and they missed a lot of outside shots, no doubt about it. What'd you think of Michigan State? I mean, like I said, they fed the big guy, who, by the way, did come back, lost some weight, looks great there. To me, you know, I like Winston, their starting guard. I you know, even Ward is a pretty solid big. I like Nene or whatever the hell his name is off the bench. Schilling played like – I mean, they had, like, if you look at their bench came through and ended up getting more minutes. They got a Schilling in – Goins got 20 and 30 off the bench. Some of that had to do with foul problems, obviously. I thought they shot the ball better percentage-wise from the field. Neither team really lit it up from three.
I kind of wonder why more people don't kind of talk about Nick Ward for Michigan State? Like, Bridges gets all the press. Obviously, you talk about Izzo. You talk about their drama. But I think if Purdue could have kind of a big, tough guy like Nick Ward, then they'd be, like, sitting really pretty. Like, every time I watch that game, it seems like he gets a double-double or has, like, over 10 rebounds. And he's kind of like their, like, glue tough guy. And Michigan State always has that one kind of really tough dude, whether it be, Draymond Green, or, I mean, he rings the bell because he's on my Golden State team. And I can't necessarily think of other people, but just going back in Michigan State history. But Izzo's always got that one tough, scrappy dude. And I feel like when I watch the games, announcers talk about him, but if you're watching the national media, all you ever hear about is Bridges and that's it. But,
right.
You know, Bridges, I kind of feel like he's Nick Ward's like a dude that, you know, in college basketball you need. I mean, he seems to score every time I watch about 10 to 15 points a game, but he can control the tempo. He can bring the ball up the court. He doesn't get pushed out of the way. He's kind of like that scrappy glue guy that I think is kind of maybe a little bit of an X factor to them. Now, I'd imagine a lot of people who are like, you know, diehards like us know about him, but I think that's a piece that come this month of February, Chris, and March, they're going to be like, okay, there's a couple of guys on this team that maybe they're not quite as flashy in lottery picks, but Izzo's kind of molding a couple of pieces. And, you know, last year or 2 years ago, you know, he got bounced out in the first round. That was an embarrassment for Michigan State. And you can't imagine that would happen another, you know, year in a row for Izzo. For a while there, Chris, if you put Michigan State in your Elite Eight, that was like guaranteed, like, auto points for your March Madness brackets. And you almost kind of have to expect, well, Izzo hasn't made the Final Four or Elite Eight for a little bit. He's probably due to do it again. You know, so because we when we lived in Minneapolis together, we would sometimes talk our brackets, like, who do you got? Or I got this and this one and this. And it's like, it used to be Michigan State, win. Okay.
Right.
Playing Elite Eight Final Four. It's a 50-50 shot. I'll pick Sparty.
Yeah, you're right. And the last two teams that looked the part didn't make it. And a lot of times he makes it with the teams that don't necessarily look the part. So, yeah, I've actually, one of those teams I picked to win the national title game. I really thought they were that deep. That's a good point. A good point about Ward as well. Just to kind of cruise through a couple games, I mentioned Virginia goes down at home in overtime, 61-60 to Virginia Tech. They do have a 26-14 lead over Miami. Somebody got hurt in their last game, I believe, a somewhat key player. I can't remember his damn name. I just saw him on the sidelines with a boot on. So they're obviously kind of pissed off, a little pissed off probably from that loss. Maybe they were looking ahead to this road game. Instead, they lost at home. Xavier went on the road, beat a quality Cretan team, 72-71. There was a questionable call at the end of the game. Now, I can't say it 100% costed the game for Cretan because they still would have had to go down and hit a bucket, but it felt like a call that should have just not been called. You know, they looked like both guys were going straight up, and it was at in the closing seconds of the game. So that is rough, especially at home. You figure you get some home cooking. Texas Tech wins tonight and kept it going against Kansas State. Baylor comes out of nowhere and pretty much trounces Kansas, 80-64, which put West Virginia in the picture. Problem is, West Virginia lost to Oklahoma State, 88-85, at home. You just don't know what you're going to get out of that club. Well, they're consistently inconsistent. We can say that. Gonzaga got St. Mary's back from a game earlier this year, 78-65. Both of those teams are kind of in that, you know, they're going to get in. It's just a matter of what kind of seeding they're going to get. They don't necessarily have the resume at times that Gonzaga has had in the past. Alabama, I've talked about them a couple of times, and they're a good club. They're a good club. They smoked a hot Tennessee team who was 15th ranked at the time, 78-50. That was a surprise to me. Not that Alabama won. I picked them to win because of the home court, and they were kind of due. That's the fifth time they beat a ranked team this year, did the Crimson Tide. They just need to, they just need to figure it out a little bit more. Kentucky goes down to Texas A&M on the road, 85-74. And I was setting up this Miami game, and they go down to BC, who hasn't done anything this year. So it's kind of eventful that way. We could talk about any of those games if you want to talk, breach upon any of that. West Virginia did manage to get back last night, 82-66, kind of looked them theirself. They got a big game coming up this weekend that we'll preview. And North Carolina looking sharp at home, 83-66. Before I break down some of this Texas Tech Oklahoma tonight, anything else that you want to talk about from Saturday? A lot of games, and of course, to keep this season going, this upside down season, a lot of upsets. Should we even call them upsets? How about just wins over ranked teams, right?
Yeah. One thing that's mildly bothered me, Chris, I do like seeing multiple good games on throughout the week and not having like a night off. I know Friday is normally like Ivy League. But one thing I think that's kind of bothered me this year is having teams play games in smaller windows than normal. Like Carolina this week, they did go 3-0, but they played three games in five nights for the first time since like 1980. I know the Badgers played like
college,
five.
Man. That's rough.
Yeah,
for college.
And the Badgers played like five games in 12 days or something. And the reason for this, for the most part, especially for the Big Ten, is because these conference commissioners are just greedy to set up when they're going to have their conference tournaments. And to me, that kind of kills the sport. Like the Big Ten started conference play super early. And along with Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan State, Purdue,
everyone had two games in early December. Then they put it down and went back to their conference. It's just going to happen this year. They've also thrown in a Friday game, though, on FS1 in the Big Ten, because FS1 has taken over a chunk of the Big Ten football and basketball. So that kind of freaking throws a loop, because you're right. Usually it was like Ivy League stuff. Break you up there, but you're making a good point.
Yeah, I think sometimes the people just get a little money greedy. College basketball is a beautiful sport. I mean, sure, there's stuff you can maybe fix, but it doesn't have the issues NBA does for like benching or resting people or any of that drama. But to see these schedules kind of get cramped up just because of how they want to set up their conference tournaments, it's like, come on now, don't be possibly risking injury rates or not giving kids time to recover. And realistically, the NBA guys, that's kind of a whole different element, but that's their only job. I mean, these kids still are student athletes, which NCAA loves to remind you they're an athlete, they're student first, or
right,
whatever BS that is. Okay, so you're making a kid play three games in five nights, and what if two of those three games are on the road? Where is the time to study for that? Oh, but he needs to study, and we're not going to give him money. But, man, we're sure going to enjoy making money off our conference tournament. It's like, that's such a hypocritical circle of BS. So, again, I enjoy seeing Carolina play a ton, but it's like, dude, the first time since 1980, like 38 years, and all of a sudden it's happening this year in the Big Ten. And the Big Ten, they just had to have their Big Ten tournament in Madison Square Garden. Well, cool.
Right.
I get that that's like the mecca of college basketball, but geographically speaking, that's not really near Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan,
well, that's
Purdue,
why they brought
Ohio.
Rutgers and ultimately Penn State a long time ago, but that's why they brought Maryland, not Rutgers. But yeah, they planned on doing this, but they're not going to keep doing it. But yeah, it's just strange. It's really strange. And you know what? They get a break. They're going to get a big gap now out of nowhere. They're going to get a huge gap out of nowhere. So it's going to kind of feel like it used to, because it used to be like some of like the SEC, the Big East, they'd have tournaments in the Big Ten and some other conferences, they wouldn't. So they just sit another week. So you're sitting out. Let's say you're a hot team, Marshall. Well, what the hell? Now we got to sit here and freeze up for, if that final Sunday or Saturday, I think it's going to probably set up to Saturday night, I'd assume. So you got to wait, like 12 days before your next game. It's kind of like, what the hell is that, So, yeah, it's a weird thing. Now, if someone were to get injured, in the Big Ten tournament, it would be helpful there. But
true.
I don't know. It also could be an advantage because if you're a higher seed, you're it's going to help you. You get rest, and you're going to be playing a team that you'll probably beat. But wonder if you're a 5 or a 6 or an 8 or then all of a sudden that team has an advantage. So, yeah, it is kind of funny how they put money first, but then they swear up and down that, this is collegiate. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
The two biggest sports in amateur can't make money, but then, Phelps is on the frickin', he gets 40 mil through Wheaties, and somehow he's still an amateur.
Yeah, it makes you wonder. And Chris, we nailed it about 3 weeks ago, speaking of the Big 12. A couple of teams, West Virginia, again, some games are hot, some games are not. I can't take too much credit because we've seen that same team for the last couple of years. They play a different style. Some nights it clicks, some nights lands them. I will say this is not the regular Kansas team, and I think that's almost a compliment to them because as much as I've disliked them, they've been a pretty darn good team. Maybe the conference has had a couple of off years and years they've won it, but normally it's always been props to Kansas. This year, you've seen numbers and games from Kansas where it's like maybe for once they have a little bit of an off year. I mean, when they were playing Baylor this past week, they had 20 points at half. It was the lowest amount of points they've scored in a half all year. They lost to Oklahoma State at home last week. It's like, and a lot of Kansas games, they've won a handful of games here by 1 or 2 points. I know Kansas State dribbled the ball like off their guy's foot with like a second to go on Lawrence to let them win a game. And it seems like every Kansas game they've won has even been like a nail biter. So this is definitely not the regular Kansas team. So you sure as heck better, someone sure as heck better win the conference this year, Chris, because if Kansas somehow gets a tie of it this year, you assume next year you're going to be back.
Yeah.
Now obviously they have like they had a star player named Billy Preston, who was supposed to be like the freak athlete lottery pick. He got into a car wreck, and I don't think it was his car, and the rumors kind of spread, and all of a sudden he's done for the year, and Bill Self and the whole KU team was pretty quiet and hush-hush about it. So who knows what that story is, but I think he would have been the playmaker they need. But to see Kansas struggle with Baylor, Oklahoma State, I see they only won tonight against Iowa State by 6. This is not the regular Kansas team. So, speaking of brackets and Michigan State kind of being chalk, I wouldn't put KU chalk because they're normally a pretty – well, actually, they've had their ups and issues. But this isn't as regular of a strong Kansas team as we normally see, which is just kind of worth stating because there's been Kansas teams I don't cheer for, but I still respect because, heck, they're good and they got a couple lottery picks or three or four of your junior, senior guards are good. This team is just kind of, they're okay, but they're not regular flashy Kansas.
Yeah, talent for talent, no way. However, they have a pretty good college club. And what I mean by that, some pieces, senior leadership, they have something that you go, huh, maybe, they usually get beat when they're really good. Right, and a lot of times in the in the Sweet 16 or around the 32, and sometimes they make that run when they shouldn't. So the door's still open, and we're gonna break that down a little bit more. Just kind of talking about the Texas Tech Red Raiders and the Sooners tonight. James gave some help to Young. Young was just off tonight, shooting, and then when he's off, they're probably not going to win the game. He made up for it on the free throw line, but 0 of 9 from outside, and obviously not a good look, whereas, you know, Texas Tech was steady, shooting over 50% from the three, and also shooting about 48% overall, so they played a little better. Oklahoma, they're a good team, sometimes even very good. You know, nobody thought they were great, but they're in games down the stretch, but they just can't close the game out. And that was the case again. That was the case in Evans for Texas Tech. Really came through, got a nice, I think it's Stevens, I can't remember, but he came off the bench and had a nice little part, spark. Stevens to 12 points and 7 boards. So just a good game, though. It was tit for tat, back and forth. Not a lot of lead. There's some lead changes, but not a lot of leads where you got a big cushion or nothing like that. Oklahoma actually started kind of faster. But it was a good game. And then right around that maybe 11, 10-minute mark, you started to say, okay, hold on. Texas Tech is getting a mini cushion, getting a little space. Oklahoma hang tough. They hung tough, and then, you know, a couple minutes left, they just couldn't get the job done. But this thing is wide open still, though, Marshall. And here's why. This Saturday, what we're previewing just a little bit, West Virginia and Kansas play, and they're sitting, you know, Kansas is in second with 4 losses, and West Virginia is sitting there in third with 5 losses. I think, what is it, 3 losses for Texas Tech, I believe, in the conference. Here's the thing, though. Texas Tech next week plays back-to-back games, Marshall, at home, or Kansas, at home, and then on the road 2 days later against West Virginia. So, you know, I mean, it obviously that kind of proves right there. I think the Big 12 will be won here in the next, give or take, 10 days. I think that's pretty basic right there. I think that'll come to it, because you have Texas Tech got the win tonight, 10-3, 9-4 Kansas, and West Virginia somehow sneaking up, still at 8-5. They got that off to that great start, so that definitely helped them. And when we kind of swing around a little bit, the Big Ten now, Ohio State, you know, back-to-back losses for Purdue. Now they're tied, and not really tied, because the tiebreaker goes to Michigan State at 12-2, both of them. Ohio State sitting there at 13-1, got that huge victory where it looked like Purdue was going to put them away. They hung in that game, got a road win, and I think you could probably give the new head coach, what's his second year, he's probably going to get Big Ten Coach of the Year. Rightfully so. Another team, though, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, how Nebraska is just lingering. They've had a nice comeback season, already 20 wins, sitting at 11-4, especially at home. They're pretty damn good. You have Michigan and Penn State kind of looking in, you know, looking from the outside, good clubs, but not, you know, nothing too special. Just to kind of wrap up that Big Ten. ACC-wise, North Carolina got a nice W. Duke is only one game up on them now. North Carolina sitting in the fourth spot, 9-5. Duke's 8-4. Clemson hovering at 9-3, still lingering there. And obviously Virginia at 12-1. We'll see, you know, the outcome tonight. How do you see a close for maybe jumping all the way to second place for your Kakalaka boys?
I like that we're, you know, getting stuff together. Again, I thought that the performance at home against Duke was one of the best defensive efforts I've seen from this team, and I think they've kind of carried that momentum. Obviously, after the Duke game, they had 2 more games, as I mentioned, so the momentum's riding high right now. Hope that something doesn't kind of go away. You know, in college football, we have to talk about how, you know, a huge win can kind of lead to kind of a cool down period, and like a loss that you really shouldn't make. And so I'm hoping that Carolina doesn't kind of slide backwards. I was looking at Lenardi's projected bracket. Right now, Carolina's a 3 seed. A couple weeks ago, I would have been saying, like, you know, 6, 5 max.
Right.
And I like the direction we're going. I'm a little bit scared to say we're kind of a 3-point reliant team because we never really have been. We've always been a point guard studded team with good bigs that we feed and run the court really fast. And I feel this year we're relying on the three, which is just kind of a little bit scary. Not that it can't work, but that's really not our DNA. So if this is going to be a different team we got, I guess so be it. We'll see where it takes us. But, and I do think second place is a chance. I mean, we got Duke again to finish the year off at home, so that could be another head-to-head massive victory. Yes, I like your momentum. I just hope that we don't, you know, I would say I hope we don't have that little mental lapse game, but everyone's had them this year, Chris. And there's going to be a game where we don't hit our threes, and then it comes down to how much can Joel Berry do for us. So I'm happy with the way we're playing, but it's just kind of strange to see a team you've been a fan of for so long kind of switch the way they normally play ball. So okay, we'll see how it plays out. But I'm not going to argue, but it's just different. So
right. They've won four in a row. Good February after what was it, 3 in a row to end the January. So you definitely got the spark. You're seeing just the team come together overall. So yeah, it's kind of like a wait and see. But Virginia looking pretty good tonight. By the way, I just saw the highlights at halftime. Nebraska did get another victory at home. Kentucky. Speaking of, it sounded like you just unzipped your fly. Kentucky, 6 for. They're sitting at 6-6. And we talk about Kansas. You know, not this isn't the same club. Kentucky is sitting at 6-6.
Wow.
Good for 7th place. I'm sorry, 6th place. So you got Arkansas, who just can't – Arkansas and Alabama can't stay consistent. Now, Missouri, speaking of a hot team, Marshall, Missouri is 8-5 now, 18 wins. They're sitting in 4th place. So you got 10-2, Auburn still on top. Tennessee slipped back off of that loss to Alabama, 8-4, Florida 8-4. Then you got that 8-5, 7-5, 7-6, Kentucky sitting at 6-6. So we got to keep an eye on something. This is probably the most we've kept an eye on from week to week in quite some time for the SEC in general, man. And another thing, just to kind of wrap up conference talk, standings and whatnot, keeping you posted, the Big East, you know, Seton Hall's a good – they're a nice – nice team. Same with Butler, Providence. They're going to make you work for it. Creighton, obviously, we just saw them make Xavier work for it. But really, the cream of the crop is Xavier and Villanova. And that's what the Big East is coming down to right now. There's a game coming up. It's 10-2 Villanova at 23-2. Just lost the number one spot. And then Xavier at 11-2, 23-3. They got a game coming up. That really, I mean, this is it. This is for the at least the regular season conference title. You know what I mean? This has to be it.
Yeah.
And obviously, it can go a long way when it comes to overall seeding and whatnot, because that's a key win, very big win there. And Xavier could turn right around and win the Big East tournament, or Villanova, whoever loses. Maybe I just showed my hand there. So it's a whole lot going on. The last time these two locked horns, though, it was a one-sided beatdown by Nova. But Xavier, they took that loss in stride, and they rattled off now 8 in a row. If they win this week, during the week, it'll be 9 in a row. And there is some solid opposition. It's not like what we talked about Michigan State, how you can see them improving, but there's not a lot of key wins until that Purdue game. Kind of an interesting matchup. I think Nova will get the job done. I think that wake up call losing to Chris Mullen in St. John's kind of will spark them. They needed that probably as well, because they were looking on like they were going to run away with the number one seed almost. I mean, I hate to say that to Virginia, but it kind of felt that way. And then obviously Kansas, number 13, Kansas, number 20, West Virginia. And we'll I'll preview that game a little bit. You know, that West Virginia started the regular, you know, conference season looking lovely. I remember the first of the year show, it was like, hey man, are these guys for real? 3-game losing streak, ugly fashion, nosedive, just I don't know. Now they've gained a little confidence. Like I said, they're lingering. They are lingering. And of course Kansas, like I mentioned, still in the hunt, dude. That's a big, big game. And also on Sunday, it takes a while now for college basketball to get going on Sundays again because of, you know, football goes so deep. And then even the NBA starts pretty early with that as well. We got some good games on Sunday. Number 12, Duke versus number 11, Clemson. Clemson, you know, the surprise team in the ACC, but they're quietly in contention. And obviously the Blue Devils are looking to recoup after losing back-to-back. You know what I mean? You look at Duke, and obviously in this matchup and really most matchups they're going to face, talent for talent, man for man, they got it. But the unity on the court, that's they just don't seem like a together team even when they're winning. And that's something that Coach K and the Dukies over there are going to have to figure out. Also that day, number 8, Ohio State, taking on rival number 22, Michigan. Michigan is a team that plays hard, well-coached. They could, you know, they could make some noise here. I'm thinking about – I got that as my under-the-radar game because of all these highly ranked games that's kind of slipping under the radar. But I might have it as my upset of the week, man. I'm still kind of going back and forth for my weekly prediction blog, which, by the way, is on thegruelingtruth.net. I had to throw that in there, right, Marshall? But I'm looking at that game going, we could have a 3-way tie at the top of the Big Ten at the end of this weekend, man. What do you think about some of these games and maybe a couple other games that – are under that radar heading into the next couple of weeks because – or not the next couple of weeks, but until, you know, early next week when we generally do our podcast weekly.
Yeah, you know, the one thing I'll say about Duke, which I love talking about them, I think that Coach K has become kind of the one-and-done coach with a little bit of that mentality. Now, clearly next year, he's got the top 3 ESPN players coming to school. That's going to be interesting. But I think he kind of needs to take a page from Calipari. He's got a bunch of studs this year, but he's always kind of been a guy that's had a bunch of juniors and seniors. And he'll normally have one pro guy, but normally not a bunch. And he normally really hasn't become a one-and-done guy. So you mentioned how they haven't really gelled as a team. I mean, you remember when Calipari first started doing this Kentucky? They weren't exactly like flying out the Raptors and stuff. So I think if K is committed to –
but they find their way to the Final Four, you know? Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think if he's committed to this way, it kind of does make you coach differently. And, so, I mean, I'll gladly say for Carolina, I mean, there were years where, when I remember watching – whether it be Ty Lawson or Raymond Felton or even Joel Berry, like, we almost always have a junior or senior point guard who I fall in love with over 3 to 4 years that cuts down the nets for us. And that's how Carolina is. We've had a couple of, like, one-and-dones, like Harrison Barnes there for 2 years. He was, like, a top-nation prospect. But we've always kind of been a build pieces. That's always how Duke's kind of been. So I think when you change your recruiting mentality, you also got to change how you coach. And I think that the reason they've struggled this year is because Bagley might be the best Duke-talented pro player Duke's had in 10, 15 years. But it's not your MO. So So I'm not going to complain. I enjoy seeing Duke lose, but I don't think people should be that surprised. It's like you're changing your scheme, because almost every great Duke player in the last couple of years, or 10, 20 years, has always been a junior or senior. That's just how they roll. So
right, and then they may have one young stud or something like that just to, to infuse the talent. But, yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
You're trying something different. And, you know, for Kentucky, this might be the first year where Calipari can't quite make it all mix. But to give him credit, this guy's found out a system of how to do it. And we've seen him go from a Christmas game or the first couple of conference road games to turn into a team that's like, damn, I don't want to play Kentucky. But this year, they still have not hit that, like, patch of, like, getting their stuff together. So this is tough. Now, for the other part of the SEC, Missouri, a team I've cheered for but haven't really talked about much on the podcast for the last couple of years because they haven't been that great, they're playing great basketball. Like you said, they're 8-5 now. And, again, as I mentioned last show, there's a good chance they're getting arguably the top one of the top three players in the country back in Michael Porter Jr. if his back's healthy. So, again, that is a scary team to look out for. And to wrap up and toss it back to you for SEC talk, Alabama. They're 5-1 against ranked teams this year. The only time they've lost to a ranked team this year was when they got, like, a penalty for tripping and, like, in roughing in hockey, and they played 5-on-3 against your University of Minnesota Golden Gophers. So,
well, they were getting beat prior to that, though. I got to stand up for my Gophers. They were getting beat prior to that.
Okay.
Then all of a sudden, Sexton's like, hey, by the way, I'm a pro player. I'm a top 15 guy. Watch me work. And that's basically what he did.
Sure,
he started hitting threes.
Fair enough.
I'll take that, dude. I'll take that, man. So that's the only thing we got going as far as my Minnesota Gophers. But that's the team that there's something about them that just keeps lingering, Marshall. That it just, you got to keep an eye on them, especially if you bet or if you're looking for some nuggets come March. I agree. And by the way, just to back it up real quick to Duke, they did cut down the nets not too long ago with 3 1-and-dones. Just to keep that in mind. Now, they gelled a lot more that season, but just to keep that in mind.
Yeah, you're right. He has done it once. Yeah. That's fair.
And that was mostly, on the back of the Minnesota kid who comes off the bench for the Minnesota Timberwolves, Tyus Jones. Also, Pac-12 fans, sorry. There is a nice matchup Thursday, Arizona State, who looks like, kind of garbage in the against Arizona, in-state rival. That'll be fun to watch. Hey, remember that Thursday FSN look that we used to have like a decade ago? There you go. You got your Thursday night game. And also, just to wrap up schedule-wise, Oklahoma at Kansas, big Monday. So my guess is that'll be an interesting game. Is there anything else you want to talk about college basketball-wise before we get into some NBA talk?
No, I think I'm good. It just gets now we get to the point where I think you really can get a feel, Chris, for how you want to fill out your bracket or what teams are for real. I know we talk about this every year, too, and it's kind of a meaningless point, but kind of not really. You start to get to the point where you start playing for seeding because, like, the Joe Lenardi brackets are going to start getting more and more full. And even though, as you say, a boxing match is decided by a different style of a fight, like, seeds do matter. Like, if you're a team right now that's looking at being a 6 or a 7 seed and you can fight your way to be a 3 or a 4 – okay, you might get screwed over in that 3 game playing against, like, the best, like, 13 or whatever. But in theory, the better seeds you get, the better chance you have. And there's always going to be a couple of those teams where right now, you know, they're, like, middle of their pack in their conference, but they finished the year off with a four-game winning streak. And all of a sudden, instead of having to scrap and claw to get to the Sweet 16, you're like a strong favorite. So it's almost like a time to like step up and like start taking your team more serious. Kind of like for baseball. Baseball, like, you love your team, but the first 80 games of the year, you're like, just don't lose them all. But come, like, September, it's like, okay, time to, like, really get locked in with baseball. Then now, obviously, the sample size of college basketball is much less than games, much, much less. But you're getting to that point now where you just got to start watching your team a little more closely and seeing, you know, are certain people making progressions? Is our team trending the right way? Are we avoiding the injury bug? You kind of have to start looking at stuff more closely because soon we're going to start getting a little more talk of who should the one seeds be or what's the seeding for a conference tournament. And for conference tournaments, especially with as wacky as this year is, the bubble's probably going to be pretty crazy. So there's probably going to be a couple teams this year that win their conference tournament that no one really had a chance of thinking they would do it. And in conference tournaments, especially with smaller colleges, career seeding is huge because you don't go to the Madison Square Garden. You get home court advantage. So we talked about the Big Ten winning a big deal play in Madison Square Garden. If you're a mid-major conference, seeding becomes very important now to you because playing for a conference championship on your home court is a massive advantage. Now, I love it when a team can come on the road and win because I think that truly throws a ton of character of a team. But for mid-major conference seeding, that's massive because a lot of times some mid-majors have it to where they have a set city, but most don't. And if you can win your mid-major conference, you can have host your own gym for a mid-major conference tournament to go dancing. That's one of the coolest things about basketball, to see small schools go. But I believe the seeding now is becoming a more prevalent issue if you're a fan. So kind of check that out with your
sure.
team. How are we looking? What does Lenardi have us at? And I
yeah.
know we kind of –
I'll make sure I double check that for the Gophers, man. I'll be really looking at that, man. That's going to be great for my team. No, you're right. The next – I was actually going to kind of talk about that and text that to you for the next show. We're going to start to look because it is shaping. You're right. And I just talked about all these big games, the Big East and how the Big 12 is going to come to a close here as far as really, you know, winning it all. And we are going to get into some bracketology talk here the next couple of weeks because it's 2 weeks before the conference finals and really only 1 week when it comes to the Big 10. And by the way, don't look now, but Miami has stormed back. And they are down only 2 points with plenty of time in the second half. Did I cut you off? Or are you going to say something there?
Oh, yeah, just 1 point. And speaking of Lenardi, you know, we kind of make fun sometimes like the ESPN, like FBI index of who's favored in games and all that crap. And in
right.
college football, especially now lately, ESPN, you got a ton of people on there that think they know everything. And honestly, some of them know just as much as they do and I do, Chris. They may have a job, but we watch the sport and our opinions are just as strong. I will say for Lenardi, that guy normally only misses like one tournament team a year. So if you're thinking, oh, maybe you don't quite follow Lenardi or you're new to college basketball or something, this dude's legit. Like, he maybe won't be perfect on seeding, but on the last like 4 to 5 years for tournament teams projected to make the tournament for his final bracket, he normally only misses one. So this isn't kind of like your ESPN guy that just argues to argue and kind of like, you know, First Take and all
right.
shows. Like, this dude's a legit sports fan. So if he has your team making the tournament or you're like a first four in, first four out team right now, then your team's pretty damn close to where he is. So
yeah,
with media nowadays becoming so opinionated and people using hot takes just to sound cool, That dude's
right.
legit. So if your team's on the bubble right now, he's probably really got you there. Just wanted to throw that in there.
That is a good difference. You're right. Because we do, for good reason, make fun of those computer-generated
yeah.
things, the ratings and whatnot, percentage points and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's a good call. That is a good call. And just NBA-wise, two things. Kind of an interesting moment on the sidelines in the huddle for your Golden State. I brought up Golden State last time. I'm going to bring up a little bit lighter of a topic this time. Kerr let the players do the talking. It's kind of an interesting take there. Also, we talked about the Cavs. You know, obviously everybody's talking about the Cavs right now with that huge trade. Boston got their ass whooped at home on Paul Pierce night, or day, afternoon, whatever. And, they got slapped in the face. The funny thing is, and they're up right now against Oklahoma City, 3:11 left. They're up by 10, so there is still hope there. LeBron, you know, trying to work on another triple-double, of course. But I'll tell you what, George Hill's not having some great game tonight, but I liked what I saw there. I also like Osman. Osman's a young guy. He's a hustle player. I think he fits in with that team, young, ready to go. Let's do this. And the bench, Clarkson came in, hit some threes. Hood came in. You know, we talked about their youth and all that. And tonight, 14 by Clarkson. 4 of 8 from Hood. That's crazy. From three. 14 off the bench. Now, they haven't sealed this one up just yet, and anything can happen. There's plenty of time left. But small sample size. I was surprised, though, that they just put a whooping on Boston, in Boston. Like I said, with the Paul Pierce, you know, raising his jersey in the, you know, retiring his jersey in the rafters and whatnot. What a great place there. And actually kind of, you know, he had a lot of quotes about KG sparking his career again. And they were talking in the summer, that summer, when KG got traded there. And he said to him that it's either going to be me, you know, you coming here or me going there. And that just dropped my freaking heart. I was like, what? I've never heard that. Now, you know, we could have maybe put Costello in a first round pick and all this stuff in there maybe. But, man, are you serious? Paul Pierce to the Wolves back then? Oh, I didn't want to hear about that. But it was kind of a cool moment. But, yeah, never heard of it and don't want to hear it again. But it was kind of a cool moment just in general. A lot of people talking about Garnett's hood, per usual, and how he finds different ways to put it on his head and keep it there somehow. New York rappers are great at that with beanie hats. You're like, how's that stand? It looks cool. I don't know how it stand on there. But, yeah, Cleveland, it's kind of funny because – they're going to run into some rough spots, but I think right away when you got a guy like LeBron, there's not a lot of tape on these guys together. And they're not going to run a ton of plays, Marshall, per se, besides basic fundamental basketball plays that everybody knows. It's not like all these guys are going to be able to memorize that. So it's going to be kind of a strange. I didn't expect them to just dominate, you know, Boston, who actually has been – struggling a little bit these last maybe 2 weeks or something like that. Just your take in a small sample size at what we're looking at, and also kind of an interesting moment for Kerr, who's not afraid, we know, you know, to think outside the box, to let the team run the show on the sidelines. And, you know, what's the stones from Cleveland said, well, they already stink LeBron's coaching the team, so I can't do that. Although I love the idea by Kerr. And he's like, and he's probably thinking to himself, well, I can't let them do that, because if they do good in there, I'm losing a job either way.
Yeah, I mean, I'll touch on my boys first. They've always had a strong team unity. You know, last week talked about. I mean,
definitely.
One example, but how, you know, Kyrie wasn't talking to his teammates, you know, and that can happen with many teams too. Chemistry doesn't always mesh. This is a team that when they won their first title 3 years ago, David Lee paid for the whole team to go to Vegas. They're a team where I've read constantly in ESPN articles about how they always have dinner all together. And I know for a fact that's not true by NBA teams from listening to, like, people who write and follow the sport. Like, the team has a chemistry that is stronger than most. Last year with David West winning his first ever ring, he came in to join that team and he basically bagged to come back. And same with JaVale McGee. I mean, the chemistry there is something special. So maybe Kerr felt like that was just a moment that had to happen, and I can only see it probably benefiting in the long run. So a little different, but, I mean, if Draymond's doing the talking and he is kind of their emotional leader,
yeah,
so be it. We'll see. So for Cleveland, I think that obviously it's a new blend of people. We'll see how they mesh here, down the road. Again, I do think their main red flag they had to, like, throw away or, like, burn was defensive issues. Now,
yeah,
clearly these sure. defensive issues may arise, but for now, with a new mix of people may play with more energy. Some guys play with LeBron. LeBron's may feature them better than they're used to in their career, blah, blah, blah. The defense numbers look better. Now, I don't think they'll regress this to as bad as they were. I think they'll come down a little bit, but right now Cleveland's on a high. You know, things are looking scary. New people come in, and boom, all of a sudden, here we go. Kind of like with a backup quarterback, though. Sometimes back quarterback comes in, no one knows about the
sure.
guy. You win a couple of games in a row, and all of a sudden, you're the hot, the hottest thing on Twitter. But a couple of games yep. later, it's like, you were a backup for a reason. Now, I'm not saying the guys that Cleveland brought in were chumps. But
no, I hear you.
Like they're also not like first team NBA All-Stars. So, yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. Now, on a sadder note, not on a serious note, but
Don't mention him because I'm going to watch the fourth quarter on DVR. I had to put that out there. Keep talking.
Okay. I have been a spoiler in the past. I'm happy you warned me. But I'm not even going there. I'm going to New Orleans, a team that was basically going to be a lock for the playoffs with DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis. That window is getting closer and closer. Obviously, DeMarcus Cousins is out. New Orleans has been doing okay, but you can feel the tread kind of slipping. One thing I didn't know until last night was the hottest team in the NBA is the Utah Jazz, who've won 10 games in a row. So they were at one point 19-28. And I don't believe they had a major trade or major injury, but my God, I mean, you win 10 games in a row, you go from being a lottery team to all of a sudden you're only a game and a half out of the last playoff spot. It's you're
they
one game behind the Clippers.
Early, Gobert was hurt early, and they're on the run. Rubio's got a little minor thing, but he's playing one of the better stretches of his career right now after starting really horribly this year. I couldn't believe his numbers earlier this year, but they're putting it together, man.
Yeah, and I mean, right now you got Utah with 29 wins, Clippers with 29, and New Orleans and Denver with 30, and that's your 7-10 seeds. So, again, that there's probably going to be a spot opening up. I don't like to sound pessimistic, but New Orleans, it's going to be hard to keep winning games without DeMarcus Cousins. Now, I should not underestimate Anthony Davis. That dude can drop a 40-point triple-double on a given night almost effortlessly. But it will be kind of interesting to see how the bottom of the Western Conference plays out. And also, to be honest and realistic, I still think come playoff time that Houston's method of literally running and gunning will hurt them. Because deep down inside, when Golden State does D up, I think they're a better team. But Houston's one game behind Golden State, Chris. And I think a Houston home court advantage would be a very huge factor.
Sure.
I mean, we're kind of looking down the road here.
And they're
but
a better
Houston
defensive
should have,
team this year, too, than they have been in the past
definitely
by a long
better.
Shot.
Oh, yeah. And I think one thing, if you're a Houston fan or a player or coach, is that you really got to put that number one seed on like your list of goals to achieve this year, because for those teams they really do thrive off their home court, whether it be Houston or Golden State. So I think it'll be curious to kind of see how the one seeds for home court advantage go. And as you mentioned last week, to finish my NBA takes, right now Toronto's got the number one seed in the East. And they're a team that they seem to sometimes falter due to high expectations at home, but maybe being a one seed, maybe being a different year, maybe that could actually be an advantage for them. I mean, eventually there's got to come a point where if you're Toronto and you have a good basketball team, you can't keep saying, well, we felt too nervous at home. Eventually you got to say, guys, we're a damn good team. How about instead of being nervous at home, we play good basketball and let those fans get behind you. So seeding is become, again, we're a little bit of ways away, but seeding is starting to become kind of an issue for NBA and kind of peek in a little bit and see how things play out. But those one seeds will definitely be interesting, Chris, for how big home court can be, especially in the later rounds of NBA playoffs.
Yeah, and just to keep you updated, Virginia had a little, like maybe an 8-point lead, and it's cut down to four now. 10 minutes left, 35-31. Wisconsin is playing in the Big East, it looks like, because this is, they just got a bucket and a foul. The game is definitely winnable for either side now, 37-31. And it looks like Cleveland is going to close out things. They will. It's right now, it's 119-112, so with 4 seconds left. So I'm pretty sure, unless Reggie Miller is going to somehow come into town, I don't think that's going to happen. And speaking of home court, 13 games in a row now for the Timberwolves at home. And they need to figure it out on the road. They're losing tight games on the road. It's kind of taken our record down in clutch tight game moments where it was really pretty damn good and obviously a huge improvement from the last 2 years off that. But, you look at that third seed and I still don't know what I want. I don't know if I want the third seed or the fourth seed. You know, if you look at the Oklahoma City, just because they beat them 3-1, I just don't know. I really want that third seed, man, because, one, they're at home. So the fourth, at minimum, they got to get the fourth to even, I think, beat Oklahoma City, because I think it's 7 games with all that experience on that roster, and they're starting to turn the corner a little bit. They're still faltering at times. I don't know. But, yeah, on the road, they're still – the thing is they don't have that same defensive energy at home, on the road, whereas they tend to start games really well at home and just in general. It's fun, though, to see the Target Center, like, selling out and getting people in there. And so, 13 in a row at home, man. So that's always I don't know what happened in this last game. Because I got the fourth quarter, it was like they were down 84-80 against Houston, so I'm assuming they lost, but I want to watch it either way. But for the Timberwolves, they're still gelling as a team. I mean, it took Miami that first, it took them a long time to gel all the way, almost a year and a half, really, if you add it up. If they didn't have back-to-back those bad games, especially from Bronny and even Wade, they probably would have beat Dallas, but Dallas really was on a mission that year and had the parts you needed just randomly, just for that year, though. Then they just couldn't get that magic back. But if you look at a guy, Wiggins is starting to come around as an all-purpose player somewhat. Now, Jimmy Butler's going to be the all-purpose guy, obviously, as far as numbers, but you're starting to see him getting his hands on the ball and play even better consistent defense. And it kind of reminds me of Chris Bosh. It took Bosh about a year and a half, Marshall, to find his role in that.
Yeah.
And this year, he's not getting to the line as much because he doesn't bring up the ball anymore. He's not getting the ball as much in his spots, some of the same spots that Jimmy likes. He's doing a lot of things that he's never had to do since Jump Street. And I'm talking since 8 years old till this last year. You know what I mean? So that's been an adjustment. He needs to get better at slashing to the hoop. Sometimes they want him to sit there and get used to being open on that three-point line at times and try to knock it down. At times he does, at times he doesn't. But Wiggins is going to be a key ingredient when the playoffs come around, no doubt. And, you know, I look for Towns and Butler to draw a lot of attention, and you still obviously can't cover them one-on-one. And we got a little piece of seeing what Butler can instill in them and Thibodeau as well, but especially Butler. When Butler went down for those four games, first game 29, second game 40, you know, and he had eight boards and that type of thing, you start to say, okay, see, yeah, we went 2-2 in that stretch, but you can see that given the chance to go back to that number one or number two option, he's developing. And analytics won't jump out at you, but that's something that'll be important down the stretch, no doubt about it. But, yeah, is there anything else you want to and by the way, in Virginia style, it's 43-34 now. They hit a couple threes, and they said, oh, you're getting close? All right, we're going to jump this thing up to 43 and keep you down to 34. Anything else, sir? The NBA break is coming up. Actually, this weekend. This weekend is the NBA All-Star game. So, in general.
I've heard my boy Ty Lawson. Looks like he's going to Washington, or at least that's what they reported. Washington. John Wall got hurt. I believe his injury is now worse than extended time back, and they had two of the point guards get hurt. So I heard that the Wizards are looking to bring back Ty Lawson, which guy's my favorite player. Got a couple of signed hats, a signed shoe from the guy. Won Carolina a marvelous ring in 09. That'd be kind of cool. I know he was. Been on NBA this year, but I hope he comes back. That'd be kind of sweet. So besides that, I'm good to go, sir. We'll continue to see how this Big 12 race goes. As Chris also mentioned, this is probably the most fun we've had discussing SEC basketball in the 7 years we've done our pod. Maybe it's not as strong with a deep and loaded Florida-Kentucky team, but from top to bottom, you could actually maybe see a bunch of teams that have a legit chance of winning their first games because the SEC is run like Kentucky and all the rest, or Florida and all the rest. This year, we got, you know, not like Kentucky, but Alabama. They could win their first game. Mizzou, they've been playing better. Auburn, they haven't won to the freaking Dan since 2003. But as of now, I'd say they're probably a shoe-in. So, hey, SEC, you know, we can actually talk a little – basketball, and not just football. So here we go. And as I said, we're getting to the point where seeding starts to matter a little bit more and more. So watch the games this week. As Chris said, the Big 12 is loaded, but so is every other conference. And ESPN only does try to mix them up a little bit. So lock in. Feel free to call in next week when we do our shows. Until then, have a very good, safe, and healthy week. I hope this cold weather starts to disappear and we get closer and closer to March Madness. In my head, I've always kind of thought once I go to my March Madness basketball tournament, that means that warm weather is coming across the whole country. And that is basically a month away. So until then, Chris and I'll be back. Enjoy the week. Watch some hoops. And we'll see you boys soon. Have a good night. We're out.